Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everyone, and welcome to BWP Online with the Coffee Lady. That's me. I'm your host, Rhonda Kuykendall Jabadi, and we're streaming live on Blog Talk Radio from Southern California. Today is Saturday, September 27th, 2008, and I'm happy to have made it through another week so I can be here with you to share new and better ways to take radically good care of ourselves naturally. Today's guest is Rebecca Hullum, the menopause expert. She's going to help us better understand what happens during menopause and how we can manage some of the symptoms without endangering our health. Questions and comments are welcome during the show by calling 347-633-9371. Or you can join in the chat room and type your questions into the chat screen, where they'll be relayed by today's chat host and the host of Blog Talk Radio's Key to Wellness, Akilah Collins. Akilah, good morning, good morning. Okay, I'm not
here. How are you?
There she is. Hi.
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, fine. If I can get over the fuzzy head this morning. I'm glad this show is all about menopause because I've definitely started experiencing symptoms myself. And I stayed out a little late last night, so I'm pushing through this morning. By the way, listeners, Akilah is having an awesome show tomorrow about how to write your personal mission statement. So be sure to check her out on www.blogtalkradio.com/QTW. And Akilah, what time is that show in the morning?
It's at 8 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay, great. And I'll be there hosting your chat room. I thank you so much for that opportunity. I love listening in to you and your wonderful guests. So, and I want to thank you, too, for helping us out today.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity. I just love being on your call. It's just
thank you.
Always fun and information-packed. So thank you.
BWP is for beauty, wellness, and prosperity. And that's what we talk about every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific time. I'm Rhonda Kuykendall Jabadi, and I'm a certified Reiki practitioner, Warm Spirit Self-Care Consultant, owner of Wellness Uprising, and creator of the Pendulum Power Teleclass that empowers people to use their intuition by tapping into their subconscious. I believe that self-care is the only level of care that matters. Without it, all other categories of care are rendered useless. BWP Online is an extension of the monthly Beauty, Wellness, and Prosperity Networking Series that takes place every third Sunday in Los Angeles, California, at the famous Lucy Florence Cultural Center in the Leimert Park Village, which is where I actually was first exposed to Rebecca's work. I just can't wait to tune her in here in a minute. To purchase tickets for the October session, go to www.lucyflorence.com, or you can go to my website, www.wellnessuprising.com. Both of those links are available on my Blog Talk Radio profile page. Our goal at BWP is to educate, enlighten, inform, and empower you to adopt a self-caring lifestyle in which you take radically good care of yourself by giving to, nurturing, supporting, and caring for yourself before you attempt to nurture, support, or care for others. Every Saturday, we welcome guests who have made it their life's work to help others achieve a higher standard of living through natural wellness of mind, body, and spirit. Information shared on BWP Online is not to be taken as medical advice. It is for information and entertainment purposes only. If you are sick or suffering from symptoms of illness, we recommend you consult your personal physician or a healer of your choice. Now, sit back, relax, breathe, grab a cup and listen up. I'm here today with Rebecca Hullum, also known as the menopause expert. Rebecca is a professional speaker and educator on menopause. She's a registered nurse and a certified menopause clinician. Rebecca is author of the book, Feeling Hot, A Humorous and Informative Guide to Menopause. Actually, it's a humorous, informative, and truthful look at menopause. See, it's kicking in, you guys. I'm so glad to have her here. Her approachable personality and extensive knowledge on women's health have made her an important part of many women's decisions on health and wellness. And I am very excited to welcome Rebecca to the show today. Let's see. Is she there? Yes, she is. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning, Rhonda. I'm here.
Oh, thank you so much for being here with us. And I am just thrilled to be in your presence again. I love your presentation style. I love your information. I've given away copies of your book, and people really enjoy it a lot. So I'm looking forward to the material that we're going to cover on today's show.
Well, it's a pleasure, Rhonda. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, thank you. Now, every day we are kind of being bombarded with messages all about menopause. On TV, there are commercials pushing drugs and pills and creams at women, and comedians are really having a ball at our expense, I tell you. And there's even a growing number of musicals out there about menopause. So the subject is growing in popularity, but based on your medical knowledge and your expertise all about menopause, can you help us to understand what exactly menopause is?
Well, sure. I'll be happy to go into that. I just wanted to make a quick comment about, you know, what you were saying. There's so much information. And, you know, the positive thing about that is that there is now so much information. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can get very overwhelming. But, you know, when we stop and think about it, you know, even 10, 20 years ago, nobody talked about menopause. So even though we have a lot to choose from, education is the most important key, I think, in learning to understand what menopause is, when it happens, what to expect, and then most importantly of all, what are our choices in terms of relieving our symptoms and, as you said, taking good care of ourselves and continuing to have, you know, good health through the rest of our lives. But to answer your question about what is menopause, if you really stop and look at it from a personal and biological type of view, it's a timed, programmed event that every woman's body will go through, assuming that we live long enough and to experience menopause. So it's an equal opportunity event for all of us, and it's expected. And that's something that, and you know, like when we went through puberty, even though we were young and didn't really understand what puberty was all about, that was a timed biological event that was already programmed into our body. So menopause is similar. It's just on the other end of it. So basically what menopause is all about is that our body is now winding down from the fertility that, you know, we had been given as women. And we're going to, you know, be going on the other side of that. Hormones that have been in abundance in our body produced by our ovaries are going to start to decline, the estrogen and progesterone in particular. And when that happens, we start to have symptoms that we haven't experienced, you know, for 30 or 40 years, such as hot flashes, night sweats, mood swings, sleep disturbances, fuzzy thinking, irregular periods. So all of those symptoms are expected as we transition through the menopause.
Okay. Now, I'm 47, and I've been experiencing hot flashes now for about a year. At first, I wasn't really sure that that's what it was. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe it is hot in here. And, you know, so they just started coming with more frequency and greater intensity, you know, that heating up from the core and then moving outward like a human microwave.
Right.
And I know some 55-year-olds who say they've not started menopause, and then some 38-year-olds who say they have. At what age does menopause usually start, and how long does it last?
Well, you know, there's actually three phases to menopause. There's perimenopause, and peri just means around the menopause. So there's perimenopause, there's menopause, and then there's postmenopause. And every woman is an individual, and that's the most important concept to keep in mind, you know, when we talk about particularly something like menopause. So not every woman is going to experience it exactly at the same time, but if you looked at just studies that, you know, scientific studies, perimenopause usually occurs in our middle to late 40s. So average age is about 48, but some women can start to experience changes in their menstrual periods and occasional hot flashes and a little bit of fuzzy thinking and whatnot. They can start to experience that, you know, in their early 40s, but generally it's, you know, in the middle to late 40s. And then menopause, the average age is about 52. Again, not every woman's going to experience menopause exactly at that time. And the definition of menopause basically just means that if you're going through a natural menopause, that you haven't had surgery, so you haven't had your uterus or your ovaries removed. If you're going through a natural menopause, menopause in and of itself just means that your menstrual period stops, and you have to go at least 1 year without a menstrual period and be around, you know, your early 50s, so to speak, for us to really key in and say, okay, yes, this is menopause. So your menstrual period stops and your ovaries shut down in terms of their production of eggs, so you're no longer fertile, meaning that even with today's technology, they may be able to get you pregnant, but it's not going to be on your own. So, you're no longer capable of getting pregnant. And then there's postmenopause. And once you complete 1 full year of no menstrual periods, then you're considered, retrospectively, you're considered postmenopausal. So some women, as you said, may not have their last menstrual period if they're going through menopause naturally till later on, till, 55. And that's considered a little bit later. And then other women can have what's called an early menopause, premature menopause, and that can occur before the age of 40. And basically, again, the bottom line is that the ovaries shut down, they're no longer producing, eggs every month, and then the hormones that are produced by the ovary, estrogen and progesterone, drop significantly, and that's what causes all the symptoms.
Okay, now you've said some things here that have just rocked my world. I want you to know, as I look at myself and I start thinking about, well, how much longer do I have to go here? You have to go a year without a menstrual period before you will be considered postmenopausal. Is that correct?
That's correct. And during that year, so what happens in perimenopause is the first hormone that we stop producing regularly is called progesterone, and progesterone regulates menstrual periods. So if you don't have enough progesterone, then you're not going to have a regular period, and a regular period could mean the period doesn't come every month, or it can start to last longer than it used to, or it can be shorter than it used to. You can have more cramps, less cramps. So there's a variety of things that can happen with the menstrual period, but the progesterone is the key hormone that regulates periods, and that's the first hormone that we stop producing in abundance, and that's why menstrual periods are a key sign in, an age, whether or not you're entering into that perimenopausal period. So once you get closer to actual menopause, you may notice that you may go 2 or 3 months and you don't have a menstrual period, and then you think, oh, well, maybe I'm menopausal now. But 2 or 3 months later, you get a period again. And then you think, well, no, I guess I'm not menopausal yet. So that can, be a little crazy-making and a little tricky. But once you go a full 12 months with no bleeding, no spotting, no nothing, and you go, 1 year and 1 day, then you're considered postmenopausal.
Okay, so now you have raised another question in my mind, which is if when you reach postmenopause, so maybe that year after menopause, are you still experiencing any symptoms?
That's a very good question. And yes, most women will continue to experience symptoms. They start experiencing symptoms, and it can be, every woman's different, so it can be mild to moderate to severe, but they can start experiencing symptoms in perimenopause and then, through the menopause. And so it could last anywhere from 2 to 10 years that you actually experience hot flashes and things like that. Now, again, not every woman is going to experience it in the same intensity. Some women will have a hot flash, one a day. Other women will have hot flashes every 10 minutes. So every woman's body is a little bit different. Some women will only experience hot flashes, and the body will actually adjust and make a full transition within a couple of years. And, just go on and say, hey, that was a piece of cake, no problem. Other women, again, will be bothered by symptoms, up to 10 years after they, began the menopausal transition.
Okay. Now, this may sound like a silly question, but are there conditions under which a woman will not experience menopause?
Well, that's kind of a tricky question. Every woman is going to experience menopause in some way, and to clarify that, if they go through a natural menopause where their body, they have all their organs, they have everything they came into this life with, their ovaries and whatnot are going to naturally shut down on their own, again, you know, usually about 48 to 52, and they will experience some symptoms of menopause. Now, some women end up with having surgery where they have their uterus and or ovaries removed. And since the ovary is the key organ in producing the hormones, if they go in for a hysterectomy and they have their uterus removed, but then they also have their ovaries removed, while they're on the operating table, once those ovaries come out of that body, they are considered menopausal or postmenopausal. So they're going to experience all the symptoms of menopause once they wake up out of anesthesia, unless we give them estrogen and progesterone for a period of time to kind of help the body make that adjustment. Now, other women may have a situation where they've been diagnosed with breast cancer. And if that's the case, then what will happen many times, the chemotherapy or radiation that is used to treat the breast cancer may put them into a menopausal state, because basically what it does is it affects that ovary and it affects the production of their normal hormones. So to answer your question, I know that was kind of a long answer. No, every woman is going to experience some menopausal symptoms to some degree, depending on what their situation is.
And so it may be forced or it may be natural.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you have had a hysterectomy, and you are prescribed the progesterone, and, you know, you said if they don't take it, then they will experience menopause, some symptoms of menopause. Is that forever after that operation? At any point, are they able to stop taking the hormone?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, any woman that decides to take hormone therapy, we used to call it hormone replacement therapy, but after the Women's Health Initiative study, the FDA changed the whole statement of it. But any woman who decides to take hormone therapy will always have the option at any point to stop the hormones and then see whether or not the body has adjusted or can adjust to, you know, this transition.
Okay.
However, you know, when you replace hormones that were produced by the body, the benefit of that is that's going to take away any symptoms, because you're putting those hormones back into the body that the body was naturally producing. But when you take those hormones away, whether you stop taking them or if you go through a natural menopause and your body naturally stops producing them, the body is going to have to go through an adjustment. So my recommendation for women is that if they're on hormones and they decide to stop the hormones, don't stop them abruptly. Go through kind of a weaning process where you slowly wean yourself off the hormone, either by weaning, not taking it every day, maybe taking it every other day, or reducing the amount, the dose of the hormone, either in half or, you know, by quarterly increments or whatever, and then give the body a slow transitional time to adjust, and then that way you'll have less bothersome symptoms. You won't be bombarded with, you know, all the symptoms.
Okay. Now, speaking of symptoms, I've been talking with women, and, of course, I've been doing a lot of reading in preparation for the show. Some of the more common ones that I know of are the irregular menstrual periods, which you mentioned, hot flashes. Everybody knows about those. Difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep after you fall asleep,
right.
Depression and irritability, absent-mindedness, hello, that's Rhonda's problem right now, and bloating or gas. And I know there are others out there. The intensity and frequency and duration of the symptoms, I presume, just like you said, every woman is different. So they vary from woman to woman. But what determines how severe those symptoms will be?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, and again, a little bit complicated to answer, but, you know, the healthiest that we are, mind, body, and spirit, when we transition into this phase of life, generally, the easier transition we're going to have. For example, our attitude about menopause and our attitude about this time of life plays a big part in how we embrace or not embrace, you know, the changes that are going to occur. If we, you know, a lot of women are dreading this time of life, and they, you know, they're just saying, they're going in, you know, kicking and screaming, I don't want to do this, then they may have a harder time just from their mind and attitude than a woman that says, well, you know, I expect to go through menopause. It's no big deal. It's something that we all have to face. I'm going to make the best of it. Then chances are they won't have quite as hard a time. But then again, it depends on, it can depend on body weight. If you're carrying some extra pounds on your body and you don't exercise regularly and perhaps your diet is not the healthiest, then these women may have a harder time with the symptoms than a woman who has the self-care in place and is exercising regularly and does watch what they eat. You know, they will probably have an easier time. So, it you know, it varies. It just really depends woman to woman.
Okay. And then so that kind of plays into what would have been one of my later questions, which was what role then do diet and exercise play in menopause? And you're saying that if you start out relatively healthy and in mind, body, and spirit, your attitude, your viewpoint, your outlook, as well as what you're taking into your body, and whether or not you've been moving your body on a regular basis to stay fit, then that can play a role in how severe your symptoms are.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's been more, you know, research, done, and more done all the time that, you know, the healthier you are, the fitter you are, the, you know, regular exercise plays a huge part in helping reduce hot flashes and night sweats because it increases vasodilation, it increases circulation throughout the body. And the better circulation you have throughout your system, the easier your body can adjust to, you know, the hot flashes and whatnot. Exercise helps you sleep better. You're going to get, you know, you're going to have less problems with the sleep disturbances. Exercise helps with irritability and mood swings. So you're going to have less problems with, you know, the mood swings. Exercise is going to help with memory problems. You know, initially, you know, we're all going to forget where we put our car keys, our sunglasses, and our best friend's name. But the better the body is able to handle the circulation throughout the system, which exercise, you know, is the best help with that, the better the body's going to be able to adjust to it.
Wow. Okay. And I want to welcome Pilly to the chat room. Thank you so much, who is saying that she's discovered that a long time ago that salt and sugar triggers hot flashes. Is that correct?
Are you asking me, Rhonda? Or
I'm asking you. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, she's not on the line. She's
okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, you know, I haven't had much experience that salt and sugar actually triggers hot flashes. My experience with hot flash triggers has been more with, like, spicy foods will definitely trigger a hot flash for many women. Alcohol certainly will trigger hot flashes. Stress, particularly, you know, stressful, like you could be in your office working and, you know, the day's going well, and then all of a sudden you get a very stressful phone call that maybe one of your children or someone you love has been in a car accident or whatever, and that throws you into immediate crisis and stress, that will bring on hot flashes. Salt and sugar certainly affects the body in other ways, particularly the salt, you know, will increase blood pressure, will cause bloating and retention of fluid, so that's going to make things harder. Certainly sugar has a whole other effect on the body in terms of, you know, causing the pancreas to work harder, you know, because if your blood sugar is higher, you have more predisposition to diabetes, and certainly sugar will affect, you know, our body weight and will affect our teeth and, you know, just all sorts of things. But I haven't really come across sugar and salt directly affecting the frequency of hot flashes.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, hormone replacement therapy. Oh my gosh, this is has been the topic of debate, you know, for years and years. Tell us, I know that we kind of touched on it after you've had a hysterectomy, partial or full, but what exactly is hormone replacement therapy as it relates to menopause?
Well, getting back to how the ovary used to function, our ovaries produce three different hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Now, we all know that testosterone is a male hormone, but our body actually produces testosterone in small amounts from the ovary and the adrenal gland. But the main players in terms of regulating our periods, regulating body temperature, affecting our brain, our bones, our breast, the vaginal area, the key hormone in that is estrogen. And so the ovary used to produce estrogen and progesterone, and estrogen and progesterone have different effects in the body. Progesterone, for example, regulates menstrual periods, it regulates moods, it helps to keep us calmer, more relaxed, it regulates sleep. So those two hormones, when they start to decline in their production, that's when we start to get all these symptoms. So 50 years ago, there was a brilliant doctor that came up with the idea that if they gave a woman estrogen, that when she went through menopause, that that would take away most of her symptoms. It would take away her hot flashes and her night sweats. It may have helped her sleep a little bit better, particularly if she was having night sweats at night. But it was the key hormone that affected our brain, our bones, our breast, and our vagina. So the doctor prescribed the estrogen, but he didn't keep in mind that progesterone is a key player and needs to be in combination with estrogen, because if you give a woman estrogen alone and she has a uterus, what they found was it developed more uterine cancer because progesterone offsets the lining in the uterus that estrogen builds up. So, make a long story short, when that started out about 50 years ago, then they realized, oh, well, we need to give progesterone too. So then they started giving estrogen and progesterone in combination. And they came up with a formula or a dose that they thought was, you know, the general formula for every woman. And so for, you know, about 30 years, if a woman was going through menopause, we in the medical community wrote a prescription for a combination of estrogen and progesterone. And it was a synthetic form. It was from a pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. And we gave the same dose to every woman that walked in the door, regardless of her symptoms, expecting the same results.
Mm-hmm.
And that was insanity, because we're all individuals. So back up about 6 years ago, July 2002, the Women's Health Initiative study, which was the largest clinical trial ever on the effects, good and bad, benefits, risk of estrogen and progesterone, released their study, and it determined that all the benefits that we thought women were, you know, getting from giving them, you know, estrogen and progesterone by pill was not necessarily true for every woman, and that there were a lot of risks that we were either overlooking or minimizing, which was an increased risk in development of breast cancer, uterine cancer, blood clots, stroke, high blood pressure, that sort of stuff. So, you know, July 2002, you know, basically the world stopped with, you know, creating and prescribing hormone therapy. Doctors told women to stop their hormones. Women themselves got scared and stopped. And then we developed all sorts of other problems because, you know, if you take hormones away from a woman too quickly, then she's going to go right back into those menopausal symptoms. So the last 6 years have been just phenomenal in not only taking a look at the Women's Health Initiative study more closely, but also pharmaceutical companies have taken a look at, well, what can we offer women that would be a lower dose, different forms. For example, it used to be mainly pills that women took when they took hormones. Now we have pills, we have patches, we have sprays, we have gels, we have creams. So we have all sorts of forms that we can give a woman and the estrogen and progesterone. And then we also have what's called bioidentical compounding hormones, which is a whole other discussion. So we have lots of choices now. And we realize, too, another thing that came out of the Women's Health Initiative study, is that most of the women in that study were well into their 60s. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that were developing a lot of the blood clots and having higher risk of strokes and heart attacks and whatnot. So now we know that if a woman is going to take hormone therapy, if we give it to her as soon as she starts experiencing menopause, rather than waiting 5 or 10 years post-menopause, then the risk of those symptoms of blood clots, strokes, high blood pressure, heart attacks is much, much less. And so it's a little less risky. So basically, hormone replacement therapy is that we give back to the body in much lower doses than the body used to produce, because we're not trying to get them to be able to be pregnant again. But mm-hmm. we give back to the body lower doses for a shorter period of time, just enough to take away the symptoms, and then reevaluate it every year with your doctor or healthcare practitioner as to whether or not you want to continue, whether or not the benefits of continuing taking hormones is greater than the risk or the side effects of not taking it. So it's come, you know, full circle and changed a lot of our thought processes on it.
Wow. Our one of the guests in the chat room is sharing that she had a hysterectomy, and so she went into forced menopause and 20 years ago and is still experiencing symptoms. And she said that she was doing the animal hormone. She didn't like it, so she just stopped, and she really hasn't started an alternative treatment or anything. She's just kind of trying to tough it out. I can't imagine 20 years of just the little stuff I've been experiencing.
Yeah.
let alone what she must be going through. She said not so much night sweats anymore, so that's a good thing, but wow. And that at the time, she just wasn't aware that anything could be done outside of just, you know, either taking the hormones or just quitting and toughing it out.
Well, and you know, that brings up a very good point. You know, 20 years ago, nobody was talking about choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you walked into your doctor's office and they said, this is it or nothing. And, you know, women have grown so much, you know, in the last 20 years and have become their, you know, their best advocate and, you know, are starting to ask a lot of questions, do a lot of research on their own. And say, wait a minute, you know, this can't be the only choice, and I want you to discuss with me other choices. So even, you know, Western medicine has a long way to go, I think,
mm-hmm.
in allowing women to discuss choices and giving women other alternatives. Eastern medicine has, you know, forever been one to look at the body and say, well, now the body has the ability to heal itself. Sometimes it needs a little help with maybe some herbs or, you know, other types of modalities like acupuncture or massage, or I know you do the Reiki. You know, there's a lot of different alternatives, complementary and alternative medicine that can be used to reduce these symptoms. It's not just all about hormones.
Right. Okay. And that took us right into the next question, which was about the natural alternative. So you're saying that for some women, the natural alternatives do actually work.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I encourage women to really investigate, you know, the approach that they want, because, you know, you had mentioned earlier, just at the beginning of the show, you were talking about intuition. And, you know, that's one of our greatest gifts. Women have a heightened sense of intuition. Men have it too, but women tend to listen to it a little bit more than men do
mm-hmm.
because of their makeup. But, you know, we have guidance within our inner being that if we take the time to listen to it, either through meditation or just even asking the question, you know, what do I do now? It will guide us in the direction that will be best for us. And for some women, it's going to be, you know, the alternative route. It's going to be, you know, the Eastern approach to medicine. For other women, it's going to be the Western approach. And for some women, it's going to be a combination of both.
Okay. That's great. And I love that we do now have the choice that more allopathic practitioners are willing to work with you and support you as you seek complementary methods of healing and wellness. I love that. Now, there was a time when that just wasn't so. They would just tell you that was, you know, quackery and don't do it. Now they are working hand in hand. At some major and well-respected medical institutions, they're working hand in hand. So I'm loving it.
Well, the other thing, too, insurance companies, they still have a long way to go, but there are many insurance companies that will now pay for, complementary and alternative approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, like you said, it was considered quackery and, not evidence-based and, all that stuff. And, women were having to pay out of pocket and weren't able to utilize the insurance that they had.
Right. I recall being on a job and paying good money for medical insurance, wanting to seek natural alternatives because of my own medical history and the success that I've had with them, knowing that I needed to pair it with my allopathic processes and treatments and diagnoses, and I couldn't get support from the insurance company, but they would pay for people to take their pets to the vet. That blew me out of the water. So we have indeed come a long way.
We still have a ways to go. Hopefully our children will have an easier time with this, when they get to this stage. And it's a process, but we have made some progress, and that's encouraging.
Absolutely. Now, I've talked to some who say they've lost weight during menopause, and others in larger numbers complain about getting thick in the midsection during this time. Can you talk to us about weight gain during menopause?
And I agree with you. I've come across very few women who've lost weight during menopause, but a majority of women who come into my office all the time complaining, what's going on? I can't get into my clothes, and all around my middle, and I'll try my little dieting tricks that I used to do when I was 30, and they're not working, and just very, very discouraged. And just from a positive standpoint in terms of the body and how amazingly the body is, one of the reasons why if we're going to gain weight during menopause, why we gain it around our middle is that the body ingeniously has the capability of converting our fat to estrogen in order to help ease our menopausal symptoms, because estrogen is the key hormone that reduces the hot flashes and night sweats. So, the fat needs to be around the adrenal glands in order to use the enzymes from the adrenal glands to convert the fat to estrogen. So that's why we get thicker in the middle. Because that's where the fat needs to be. So the body, intuitively and ingeniously knows that, if we're going to gain weight, that's where we're going to put it. However, that doesn't mean that we have to walk around and, not be able to get into our clothes and, have a thick middle. The other thing that happens to the body as we age is that our metabolism slows down. Mm-hmm. We're no longer growing at the same rate as we were, when we were babies, children, and adolescents, and young adults. So we don't need the same quantity and same calorie intake that we needed earlier, because we don't have, the growth that we have. So our metabolism slows down, so we're not burning up the same amount of calories. But in our culture, particularly here in the United States, we think if a little is good, a lot has to be more, and we don't reduce our calorie intake as we age. We continue to eat the same amount of food, and the body can't burn it up unless we're out there exercising regularly. So that's another reason for the weight gain. A third thing that happens is that not only does our body not metabolize and burn up the fat as quickly, our bodies become very sensitive to carbohydrates. So any of the, white sugar, white flour products, processed foods are going to contribute to this weight gain. So women need to be very cognizant of what they're eating. Fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, things like that, lean meats, fish, chicken, if they're going to eat the animal protein. Those are the kind of things that, that we need to stay with rather than all the processed fast food, that sort of stuff.
Okay. Now, I also hear women, and by the way, when they started talking about carbs not being the way for us to go. I love bread. That has been the hardest thing for me. But I'm down to about 2 slices a week, so I feel better.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, yeah. I really started packing it on, Rebecca, in the midsection. And, you know, and then I have diabetes on both sides of my family. I'm African-American. I've got all these cards stacked against me. So I had to make some tough choices. And I tell you, it is so hard. I love bread. But
yeah.
I also have talked with others who said that they lost their libido during menopause. What causes this, and is this something that is going to happen to every woman?
Well, the good news is no, it's not going to happen to every woman. The not-so-good news is that probably the majority of women will experience a decrease in their sex drive, their libido, as once they transition through, you know, perimenopause, menopause. And the reason for this is that, again, getting back to the hormones that the ovary used to produce, testosterone is the hormone of desire, and testosterone will decrease as well as the estrogen and progesterone when we go through perimenopause, menopause. And with a decrease in the testosterone, we're also going to have a decrease in our desire, you know. That's a big problem with women in menopause, and it's a real sadness, because for those of us that, you know, have really enjoyed a vibrant sexual life throughout our, you know, adult years, to come to a point where, you know, we don't even think about making love with our partners anymore, you know, it's a real loss. You know, it used to cross our minds.
Right.
We could look at, you know, even though women aren't as visually oriented as men, I mean, you know, women, men have a sexual thought, supposedly, according to research, about every 7 to 9 seconds. You know, women don't have time to think about sex that frequently. We have a lot
right.
more on our minds than that. But, you know, we used to, you know, be able to look at, you know, great-looking men like Brad Pitt and whatever and think, wow, he's a good specimen. But, you know, you get into perimenopause, menopause, and, you know, you it just doesn't even, you know, register in your mind. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. So it's mainly due to testosterone. Estrogen plays a role in the comfort that we have vaginally when we have intercourse, because estrogen produces vaginal lubrication and keeps the vagina healthy. So if we don't replace the estrogen in our vaginas, then eventually over time, the vagina, which basically is a long muscular tube, is going to shrink in its size and its diameter, and the tissue becomes very thin and easily irritated. And then intercourse becomes almost impossible. So if we're going to replace any hormones, you know, I'm a strong advocate that you can put a small amount of estrogen inside the vagina to keep it healthy, and it's not going to put you at risk for breast cancer or uterine cancer, the other types of problems. So estrogen plays a role. Testosterone definitely plays the role in the libido. Right now, the only testosterone form that we have that we can provide for women is through a bioidentical compounded form, which is a good form. But meanwhile, the FDA is thinking about approving new testosterone products for women coming either in a patch or gel, but that's not out yet.
Okay, great. I see that we have a caller here from area 919, prefix 781. Caller, did you have a question for us or a comment?
This is Dr. Aish from Raleigh, North Carolina. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for calling into the show today.
Thank you for your show and for regulation for that.
Did you have a question for us?
I already emailed you an offer for the course, the one I teach. I'm a homeopath. I'm not a medical doctor. And if you want to learn more about the course, you can send me a note, and I'll be more than happy to share with you what I do. And you can share that with your people if you feel comfortable to do so.
Okay, wonderful. I'm going to mute you out, but if you continue to listen and you have a question, just press 1, and I'll get back to you.
It's not a question. I highly recommend that you will you will look seriously about the homeopathic way of remedies to take care of your temple. This has been proven scientifically and is much better than the other conventional way of taking care of your temple.
Okay, great. Well, I'll be sure and look over your information, Dr. Ayesh.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now, Rebecca, I would love to play, if you have time and if you're up to it, like a true-false game. I'd love to do this with my guests where I talk about myths or, you know, common beliefs, and then you can tell me whether or not they're true or false.
Okay.
Okay. So, well, we've already blown one of them out of the water, which is that menopause always occurs around age 50. And that is false, right?
That is false.
Okay. We figured that one out early. Another is that you can always tell you're in menopause when you get hot flashes, night sweats, irritability, insomnia, and other physical symptoms.
Well, that's false, too, although we didn't go into that too much. But, you know, there can be other reasons why you're having those symptoms, particularly you know, your thyroid may be out of whack. So, but, you know, assuming that you're having those symptoms and you are a certain age, that's the first thing we think of, but that may not be the only thing.
Okay. Another belief is that your sex life changes forever after menopause.
Well, I would say that that's false. You know, your sex life can change, but that doesn't mean that it still can't be of a high quality.
Okay.
There's ways we can work around that.
And it's the same thing even when you have a baby. I mean, it changes, not necessarily worse, but it's definitely different.
Yes. Well, it's definitely different, yes. Okay. So, I mean, I can agree that it does change, and it's definitely mm-hmm. different from what you were experiencing, but that doesn't mean that it's going to change for the, you know, the worst. If, you know, there's life.
Okay.
There's sex after menopause.
Okay, this is a good thing. Okay. Now, let's see. Oh, another one is after menopause, you have no estrogen in your body. True or false?
That's false.
Okay. So in varying degrees, depending on you and your body.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. You will continue to produce some level of estrogen.
Yes.
Okay. Another is that after menopause, you will inevitably retain the weight that most people gain during menopause. True or false?
That's false.
Ooh, that's good to know. Okay. Here's a great one. After menopause, your bones are more brittle. True or false?
Well, you know, that's a gray area. There is a concern that with decreasing estrogen levels and possibly lack of exercise and if you're not taking, you know, an adequate calcium and vitamin D, you know, you can develop what's called osteoporosis. But that's not necessarily true for every woman.
Okay.
It's something that needs to be screened. I think every woman needs to have what's called a DEXA scan to determine the condition of her bones, but that doesn't mean that every woman is going to have brittle bones after menopause.
Okay. Okay, great. Now, I do have some more, but before I do that, because I'm loving this information that you're sharing, can you share with us your upcoming conferences, forums, different things that you're going to be doing so that our listeners will know how to find you and how to get more information?
Oh, okay, sure. Well, I'm actually leaving next Wednesday. I'm flying out to Pittsburgh. I'm going to be doing actually a nursing conference. I have two topics I'm going to be presenting. One is female sexuality and aging, which we kind of touched on today. And then the other one is on weight over 50. So that will be done in Pittsburgh. And then I will also be going on to North Dakota and speaking at a summit there in North Dakota to consumers. They're doing a big program to educate the women in the community. And I will be the keynote speaker in North Dakota. I've also recently been doing a media tour, actually. I just came back from Tampa I was down in Tampa and Miami doing television interviews talking about sleep disturbances and ways that women can get a better night's sleep by not using prescription medications, more natural products like melatonin, talking about the importance of having a healthy sleep routine, a healthy sleep environment, and using sound machines and, you know, light therapy and things like that. So, and I just did a TV interview yesterday here with ABC, again, on sleep disturbances. So they can visit me at my website at themenopauseexpert.com. I also have a newsletter that I write every month called The Menopause Moment. They can sign up for that. That's free. So that's what I've been doing.
Okay, that's great. Now, did we miss your conference this year, your Feeling Hot conference?
You know, you did. I that was held June 26th through the 28th, That was held at the beautiful resort in Miraval in Tucson, Arizona. Everyone had a great time. Of course, it's hard to have a hard time at a health resort.
Right.
but the conference was very well received. We had some great speakers there, including myself, but some other speakers. We had an acupuncturist that spoke on the Eastern approach to relieving symptoms of menopause, and we had a weight specialist that spoke, and some other speakers. So, and we had some great sponsors, and of course we had we were at the health resort, so we had some wonderful food and exercise, and so it was great. I really enjoyed it. I do have to say it was a lot of work. Putting on a conference like that, and I don't think I'll be, putting on my own in the future.
Well, we forget because we're servants, but we're also business people.
Yes,
you want to help and you want to do everything, but it can be overwhelming.
Yes, it can. It can. It's a lot of work.
Wow.
But it was a great experience, and I'm glad I did it. It was one of my dreams, and and I fulfill that, and that's something that we all have. And if there's anything that, I'd like to say about menopause is that to really encourage women that this is not the end of life. Mm-hmm. We have another 30, 40, 50 years that we can live a vibrant, healthy life. And we've got so much more to experience. So, menopause is a disruption at times, and it's a pain in the what, but it will pass.
Okay. Now, part of the BWP Online's mission is to empower listeners with ways to achieve a healthier lifestyle with whatever is at their disposal today, because we're great at making the excuse of, oh yeah, I'm going to go out and get ABC so I can do DEF. And I always say to people, we can start with whatever is in front of us right now. What three things can our listeners do or begin to do today to have a healthier menopause?
Well, I think first and foremost, if they're online here and listening to us chat about this, education is one of the key important things. Collect as much information as you can and understand what's happening to the body. That helps, certainly. Incorporating healthy lifestyle choices, which includes eating healthy foods, fresh foods, getting regular exercise, is certainly going to help. And I really strongly believe in having some sort of spiritual connection, whether that's through meditation or mindfulness of some sort, belonging to a group of like-minded people that share your spiritual beliefs. I think that will definitely help you have an easier menopause. A support system.
Yes. Okay, wonderful. Oh, and I love this because I have a few minutes left, so now I can go back and finish up all my questions in the true false game. I wanted to make sure we got that stuff in without feeling pressed. Now, another common belief is that breast cancer is more common after menopause. True or false?
That needs clarification. It is true that breast cancer, the frequency of breast cancer, tends to be an age-related cancer, which means that the longer we live, that 1 in 8 chance of developing breast cancer, those are the statistics in terms of age. So after menopause, there is more diagnosis of breast cancer than there is prior to menopause, but it's more an age-related cancer. The breast cancer that is diagnosed prior to menopause tends to be a more aggressive breast cancer than the breast cancer that's diagnosed after menopause. You know, the longer we live, there is a chance that, you know, we may develop it, but not every woman develops breast cancer. There is a greater chance of developing other cancers more so than breast cancer, but we hear a lot about breast cancer. And so, and we all have had friends, certainly, some family members that we know. And so when it's right in front of our face, it tends to feel like it's, you know, bigger. And it's certainly important. I mean, you know, it's a cancer that, you know, all women are concerned about.
Wow. Now, I wonder, too, as you talked about the fact that, I mean, the numbers just go up the older women get, period.
Right.
You know, not necessarily related to menopause. So I also wonder, then, if those numbers have not been a little skewed by what we talked about earlier, the hormone replacement therapies that were used early on that actually contributed to breast cancer. And so maybe over time we'll begin to see those numbers thin out.
Well, we're sure hoping so. You know, we're certainly looking at that as, you know, a big contributing factor. You know, there's no doubt about it that women that did take hormones at higher doses for a longer period of time had a greater chance of developing breast cancer. And we've known for a long time that the length of time that you take the hormones, particularly greater than 5 years, women have a greater chance of developing breast cancer. Again, however, I think there's other things that we can do to help protect ourselves, and exercise is first and foremost. Women who exercise regularly tend to have less problems, and you know, with that. So, you know, there are a lot of variables, and every woman has to look at, you know, their health history, their family history, their personal life history, their lifestyles, and see, okay, what area can I improve on here that will give me a better chance of living a longer and healthier life without developing breast cancer.
Wow. I have to say that today's show has been just one of my favorites. Our time is almost up, but I thank you, Rebecca, for being here with us today and for sharing your wisdom, and I appreciate the work that you do and the service you provide to the universe.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Listeners, whether you're listening live or in the archives, I thank you as well. And you can pick up Rebecca's book, Feeling Hot, A Humorous, Informative, and Truthful Look at Menopause, at major bookstores, or you can use the book link on my Blog Talk Radio profile page at www.blogtalkradio.com/yourcoffeelady. And for more information about Rebecca and her upcoming conferences and workshops and media appearances, visit her website at www.themenopauseexpert.com. Listeners, I thank you so much for choosing to spend this time with me. I know that we could all be somewhere else doing something else, so you are valuable to me, and I love spending this time with you every week. This show has been recorded and is available right now at www.blogtalkradio.com/yourcoffeelady. Don't forget to leave a comment on the profile page to let others know what you think about today's show. Share some of this powerful knowledge with your friends by sending them the link to the show. Join us next Saturday when we'll talk with Simon T. Bailey, author of Release Your Brilliance. Join us and find out how to unlock your own special qualities to be the best you can be. Remember to strive every day to take radically good care of yourselves by giving to, nurturing, supporting, and caring for yourself before you attempt to nurture, support, or care for others. This is Rhonda Kuykendall-Jabadi your host of BWP Online, saying thank you and be well. And Rebecca, thank you again so much for being with us.
No, it was a pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
And you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.